The Inside Ellen Road podcast is sponsored by PR Supplies at Unit 2 Wither Park Industrial Estate, Leeds, postcode LS53AP. Check out PR Supplies on Facebook for all your home retail needs. Hello, welcome back to the Inside Elland Road podcast and Happy New Year. Leeds kicked off 2024 in style, getting themselves back to winning ways, cutting the gap to the automatic promotion places and managing to get a former Manchester United player the sack, all in one fell swoop. January also means the return of two things I'm extremely pleased about, note the sarcasm, the FA Cup third round and the transfer window. As always, I'm joined by YEP chief football writer Graham Smith, who's equally delighted to be thinking about and fielding questions on transfers for the next 4 weeks. Graham, how are we? Good New Year, was it?
Yeah, quiet one, obviously, with a game on New Year's Day, ever the professional, in bed by 11. And then, obviously, a game that was interesting. Lots to think about and talk about from that one. And then, yeah, it's been a good start to the year. Still always feel a bit sluggish this time of year. It takes me a week or two to get going. But unlike you, I'm actually quite excited for the FA Cup because I like the FA Cup. I love knockout competitions and I like this one. And I quite like the draw. I just think it's a really difficult one, but we can come on to talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, the last episode we did was before the West Brom and before the Birmingham game. So we'll probably go through those first. That's probably a good place to start. Disappointment at the Hawthorns. The Baggies winning 1-0 against Farkas Leeds. Back-to-back defeats in that one after the disappointment against Preston on Boxing Day. And it made it three away games on the spin, which Leeds had lost as well. I mean, rather than delving into something which happened two games ago, is the away form something which is a concern to you at all? Because I mean, I know it's the case in any other season they'd be doing, you know, really well, but do they need to match the away form of the likes of Leicester City, who I think have got 12 points away from home more than Leeds already at this stage?
Yeah, they do. They absolutely do. I have a few thoughts on it. I mean, firstly, I said on the last episode, Carlos Corberan will be rubbing his giant comedic oversized hands at the thought of a clean sheet against Leeds. And
what did he get?
It went largely as feared. That was exactly the result, exactly the scoreline, and exactly the performance that we feared. And it was another one of those. I mean, that's 4-1-0 defeats on the road this season. And yet another example of Leeds coming up against a team that is quite happy to sit and quite happy to be organised and to shift and to pack space and park the bus, if you want to use that term. And Leeds really struggle. Now, there's always kind of been in each of those games, or almost always been, a chance or a moment where you thought this was a turning point. Like the Bamford penalty at Stoke could have changed the game. And in the West Brom one, there were penalty shouts that definitely could have changed the game. Both were probably penalties. One definitely was and should have been a penalty. And that kind of allows Daniel Farke to talk about what could have changed the game and how it could have been different. But it was the performance for me that kind of added to that worry about what they're like on the road and what they're like when a team just sits. And it almost felt like coming after Ipswich obviously tried to play against Leeds and got the reward of a 4-0 defeat. It made me wonder if any team would actually try and play football against Leeds again this season, because the blueprint has almost been set. It's almost been written, hasn't it? And West Brom was very much the kind of the archetypal performance from that blueprint. And Leeds kind of, they do that thing where Farke puts on loads of attackers. They get the ball to Jadon Anthony and he tries to cross into the box with a real kind of mixed bag, varied success. And West Brom, with it felt like about 8 giant centre-backs on the pitch, just taking it in turns to get up and nod the ball away. Just very little space for Crescencio Somerville and Jorginho Rutter to operate in. Nothing went right for Joel Pirot again in one of those games. It's just one of those, wasn't it? And the reaction to it, I have to say, was a lot more vehement, a lot noisier than I expected.
Yeah, there was a smattering of people suggesting that, you know, Daniel Farke doesn't know what's happening here. I mean, you have to look at the bigger picture, I think. Yes, it was disappointing in the context because everyone had got their hopes up after Ipswich. But, you know, the real reaction and the real verdict, essentially, was going to be after the Birmingham game. Because if they'd struggled in terms of result-wise and performance-wise against a team who were in a really poor run, then you would have said, okay, you know what, this team are in a bit of a slump. Something needs to change here. I mean, the change did come in terms of the starting 11, didn't it, with Joel Pirot dropping out. I mean, we'll get onto the goalkeeper stuff shortly, but what did you make of the Birmingham game, the new setup, if you will, or the slight tactical tweak that Farke went with Jorginho Rutter dropping into the number 10, maybe starting position being a bit deeper, and Patrick Bamford in the number 9 role?
I wasn't surprised that Pirot didn't play, because I think that there were sufficient performances in recent weeks to suggest that it was time he had a break and someone else got a chance. And it, you know, we could talk about Patrick Bamford for a minute. It could have gone one of two ways. You know, we were saying before the game when we were chatting about the team, this could be in the making of Bamford, or it could really compound the feeling that had been around the way his season had gone, you know, the frustration, the body language, the kind of the growing feeling that there was a real disconnect between him and the fans, and a growing feeling that, you know, maybe it would just be better for him if he wasn't at Leeds with the expectation and pressure on his shoulders, and kind of after a really, really difficult couple of years. But you can see sense in having Bamford in front of Rutter, because Bamford is that number nine who'll play on the last shoulder. He'll try and make runs in behind. He made loads of runs that weren't spotted again.
He can also still lead the press as well. You know, you think about those arcing type of runs that he's done previously, you know, particularly under Bielsa. He still has the capacity and ability to be moldable by a coach to say, look, I want you to lead the press.
Yeah, he is a. I think he's quite a good defensive forward. He's very useful for set pieces as well, defensively and in attack. And also, Rutter as a 10 didn't come as a massive shock to the system. There was no alarm bells raised because Rutter plays all over the shop anyway. You know, how many times have we seen him operating from his own half and exactly. springing somebody? And I really liked his performance at 10. I just felt like he offered a lot more in terms of creativity than Pirot. I just think he has so many options when he gets the ball with his back to goal, you know, almost no matter where he is on the pitch, because he can control it, hold off the centre back or whoever's marking him and just lay it off. He can roll the player and he's gone and he's into space and then he looks up. And then he's finding players and he's splitting the defensive back line with a pass. He's feathering it through to Somerville, you know, or he's running on to try and take a shot himself. He just offers a lot, doesn't he? And it was a funny game because the first 10, 15 probably Leeds a couple of times looked dangerous. They looked dominant because they had so much of the ball. Birmingham were largely clueless, but Leeds weren't really that incisive. But then something changed, or maybe they just started to grow in confidence, and Rutter was key to that because he suddenly, I think I said to you during the game, Rutter is starting to really feel this now because he was just getting on the ball at every opportunity and trying to turn people and run people, and the tricks started to come out, which we can talk about as well later on. And once they got the first goal, that result was never really in doubt. You like the second goal and you love the third goal because it creates that sense of this game is now finally done. And there will be no miracle for Birmingham. You know, Tyler Roberts is not going to come on and deflect one in off his backside from 35 yards from a Leeds player's attempted clearance. that kind of thing is not going to hurt you today because you've got the cushion. So the third goal felt really important. And it was quite enjoyable, wasn't it, all round? I mean, it just, first half wasn't amazing, but they were good enough and they got the goal. And the fact that Bamford got the goal, I think, was really important.
Yeah, speaking of Bamford getting the goal and the first half maybe not being as much of a thrilling encounter as it could have been, I genuinely think as Dan James crosses the ball, you leaned over to me and said, Bamford hasn't really done much today, has he? And then
yeah, it was just before he got
3 seconds.
Yeah, I'm going to start saying that about different players. In fact, it's not the first time this season it's happened. I said it about Somerville, didn't I? In a game not so long ago.
It was another one at Elland Road, yeah.
Yeah, and within seconds, not minutes, within seconds, he'd put the ball in the net. didn't I say about Clyson as well? He's not really had anything to do. And then Birmingham then went through, and he makes a save with his feet. I've got some weird power of discernment that I'm not fully in control of, and I don't really know the consequences that are possible. Bamford hadn't really been in the game too much at all. And then Dan James just puts one right between the centre backs. Reminded me a little bit, different side and different kind of cross. But when Jack Harrison crossed the ball at Bramall Lane and Bamford was right between the centre backs, Bamford had kind of told Harrison, every time you get the ball, look up, I'll be between the centre backs. And Harrison put the ball exactly where he wanted it. And so all he had to do was finish it. It was that kind of moment. You know, James has just put the ball in the perfect spot. Great cross.
Dan James also said that in his post-match media duties was that Bamford had told him, look, you put the ball there, I will always be there. And so for you to say that about Jack Harrison and the Sheffield United goal, then it's probably something that they've discussed.
Yeah, well, that's good stuff from Bamford. You know, he should be telling his wingers exactly where he wants it and they should be trying to put it there. Would you have trusted Dan James of previous seasons to be the man to put it, you know, on a sixpence like that?
I'd trust Championship Dan James, yeah, because he was great at Swansea, wasn't he? Premier League, different kettle of fish. You don't get that time, you don't get that run where you're feeling really confident, because you know you do just get a lot more space in the Championship to dig out crosses like that. But look, he's doing really well, and if he can replicate, I think after he was not dropped, but rested or whatever you want to call it for the West Brom game, and then he came on for Nyonto, there was a difference, I felt.
He did make a difference.
And then it was a case of, well, yeah, James then also has to start again against Birmingham, bring him straight back into the 11.
Yeah, he's having a good season, Dan James. There's no two ways about it. Back to Bamford, he had to get the finish right, and he did. And then he had to get this, it's almost important, almost as important, he had to get the celebration right. And I, for one, was relieved that there were no fingers to ears, there were no fingers to lips. It wasn't a moment about his haters or the people that abused him last season and went far too far. It wasn't a moment of him celebrating, you know, on his own, away from teammates or away from the crowd. It was everyone in the stadium is delighted that this has just happened. And we should say as well, Elland Road has been pretty good with Patrick Bamford. Now, we can't hear everything that the players hear when they go to take a throw-in or they're over by the touchline, or because you will get isolated shouts that we're not aware of that players pick up on. But how many times has a name been sung, you know, even after he's missed chances at Elland Road, or when he's run up and down to warm up in front of the West Stand? You know, he's always had a good reaction, a good reception. And I thought Elland Road
was taken aback ever so slightly. I was taken aback by sort of the strength of feeling with that goal. If you know, obviously Bamford was going to be relieved, but you could see it in the faces of everyone. It was like, as you were saying, I'm so glad that this has happened, because it means that, you know, that's that broken record that's been going around and around. You know, he hasn't scored, he hasn't started, you know, has his relationship with the fans run its course? No, it hasn't, because there were so many people who afterwards were, you know, absolutely delighted. Like, that was the highlight of the game. That was the headline moment. And yeah, I was just taken aback a little bit by the strength of feeling, positive strength of feeling.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a good moment for Elland Road, good moment for Bamford. Monkey off his back, really. Because the longer you go without a goal, it's all people want to talk about. Mm. For good reason, because that's what you're there for. You're number nine. You're supposed to put the ball in the net. And he did so. And after that, it just felt largely very comfortable for Leeds. I mean, Birmingham were honking. Like, they were... They absolutely Huddersfield it, didn't they? Like,
yeah. They really weren't good at all.
Could not see a plan. I mean, obviously the plan is to try and hit Leeds on the break, but you or I could have that plan. You know, it wouldn't mean that we'd actually have a coherent strategy as to how that was going to happen. And I didn't see a coherent strategy in what Rooney, and I could see his frustration, particularly in the second half when it looked like to me, some of their players were just bewildered, either bewildered or
not bothered.
Beleaguered or not bothered, which is a terrible thing to aim at a professional. But there were moments when they let Leeds get to the ball first, and Leeds were winning the ball back relentlessly in the Birmingham half in the second in the second 45 minutes. And you could see Rooney getting wound up. And I was kind of thinking to myself, how much is left in this for him and for them? Because it was miserable for them, you know, for their fans. And they're a proud football club and a proud fan base. And that will have really stung, you know, going to Elland Road and getting so comprehensively beaten, having their manager just ridiculed from minute one to minute 96. You could, and his press conference afterwards, you could kind of feel like this hasn't got long. There's not much left in the legs of this. They were awful. But they still had to be beaten, and they still had to be, you know, bopped on the head after they were put on the hook in the first half, and Leeds did that. And Firpo with two assists. Mm-hmm. Who saw that? Who saw that come in? Who had that on the bingo sheet? Good start.
Should we discuss
the
goalkeeping situation? Because Daniel Farke told us after the game, didn't he, that it was in the warm-up. And this is you being quite eagle-eyed at the Hawthorns. In the warm-up at West Brom, Carl Darlow dislocated his thumb, had it strapped up, had some painkillers, wanted to carry on, wanted to play on, ultimately went for an MRI the following day, and it was determined that he wouldn't be able to play against Birmingham 3 days later, or 2 days later after the MRI, which meant that Christopher Klassen comes in for his full debut. You know, 2.5 years after signing for the club, it's obviously been probably a difficult time for him, considering that he hasn't played pretty much any football competitively for God knows how long. It must have been about 6 months. Came into the game and did reasonably well. You know, wasn't a lot for him to do, but I tweeted after the game, you know, a clean sheet on your Elland Road debut is a clean sheet. There were fleeting chances that Birmingham had, but he stood up to the challenge. Made one decent save, I think I can remember. Was quickly out of the blocks to close down the angle when Janino Bakuna went through. I mean, I don't know if it's the long term fit, but
I mean, it's not. I think there's a couple of things to say on Klaassen. I don't think his kicking was great, but.
That's interesting because a lot of people were saying that they liked his distribution. After the game, I'm with you on that.
Yeah, maybe one or two or three of the times where he kicked it too long and gave it straight back to Birmingham or kicked it out. Maybe those times stuck in my head too much. Maybe I made too much of those, but I didn't feel like his distribution was amazing, and I felt like the centre backs kind of, and I felt like there were moments when he wasn't quick enough to make the decision, am I giving this to Rodon or am I going to send it long? And I thought a couple of times Rodon in his body language looked a bit like, make up your mind, like, give me the ball, you know, let's get it going again. Because a lot of what Leeds do, a lot of what they try to do is to play with the ball so much and move the ball so much that the opposition have to run and the opposition get tired. And if Chris Klaassen has the ball and is stood in his box, kind of either waiting for Birmingham to press, which was probably never really going to happen, or waiting to decide is there an option for me out wide? Am I going to send it long to Bamford, or am I just going to just lay it off to Rodon? That's given the opposition time to breathe, time to stand, you know, time to not be moving. So I felt like I wanted him to hurry up a bit. But also, is it possible that there's a first team Claisson and that there's a football that doesn't really matter Claisson? Are there two versions of this man? Because the Claisson we saw against Wolves when he came in at Molineux in that game when Melier went off injured, he was fantastic. He made like four significant saves in that game. Remember one where he palmed it over the top, just at full stretch, fantastic save. And he was solid, I thought, you know, when it came to saves and presence. Don't remember him flapping at corners the way Darlow did against West Brom. You know, he didn't, there was nothing that made you think, oh dear, like keep the ball away from this man at all costs. Whereas in the 21s, he hasn't been great. You know, he hasn't been.
He hasn't played this season. So his 21s experience, I genuinely think the last time he played for the 21s was February of last year.
But last season, it wasn't great, was he?
No. He wasn't, but I mean, ultimately that football does matter, because how else are you going to prove that you deserve to be playing ahead of Ilan Melier if you're not doing it for the 21s?
And it's a tiny sample size, you know, from his first team experience, so we can't really judge it yet. But there was nothing in it that made me think, oh dear, like Leeds are going to have to get a keeper in. Leeds are going to have to get a keeper in, you know, before the FA Cup. But I wouldn't be surprised if Darlow's going to be out for a fair time with this dislocated thumb. Then I would think it might be prudent to use this month wisely and think, is there a keeper out there who will be like, not, you don't want to say content to back up Melier, but will understand that he's coming in as a number two to begin with. But obviously then, you know, the player himself has that decision to make, you know, am I going to really try and challenge this keeper here and try and make it awkward for the manager to pick him? But you just wonder, do they need to go and do that maybe this month?
Yeah, you just had me Googling how old Rob Green is very quickly there, just to see if there was a potential. Speaking of dislocated fingers, have you seen that video where Rob Green explains his...
I was looking in the comments to see people asking, is this real? Because that was my first thought. Is this real? Like, that's wild.
How has he played top-level football for God knows how many years with that?
It's incredible. Like, actually incredible that he just... I mean, that is the ultimate in, well, just strap it up, you know, just put a bit of tape on it. I mean, that's an appendage that's basically hanging off, and he's just taped it up.
For like 600 games, yeah.
Remarkable.
Yeah. Come on, Carl, channel the inner Rob Green. I mean, to be fair, he did against West Brom.
There is side before self, isn't there? And then there's that. But Darlow, you know, on the day when his missus was due, he was happy to travel to the Hawthorns. And then, like we saw, I wondered if maybe something he'd eaten over Christmas had bothered him a little. Maybe he had a delicate constitution like some of us do. But no, he'd actually dislocated his thumb and then took, you know, popped as many paracetamol or Codamol or whatever it is that they carry around in Rob Price's bag, the stuff that you're allowed to take, and then went out and played. So fair play. And then reported for training the next morning, then went for an MRI and then went to the hospital to be with his wife. So that was very much above and beyond.
Do you think he was potentially sat there sort of at the bedside? You know, she's potentially going into labor and he's like, yeah, you know, it's really hurting. I'm having so much trouble with it.
Saying to the nurse,
she's having oxygen.
Saying to the nurse, do you think you could get me anything for? Is there two of those epidurals there on that tray? Could I?
A bit like Michael Scott in The Office when he's like, you know, what's doctor? What's more concerning, a burnt foot or a concussion? Like, what's more painful, childbirth or a dislocated thumb? it's 4D chess from Carl, if we're being honest, because he's not going to be changing any nappies with a dislocated thumb, is he?
Yeah. Yeah, you wonder, don't you, if he's done it on purpose. Like a player getting a yellow card just before the cutoff date in order to not play at Christmas. That would be extreme. It'd be very extreme to not change nappies. Changing nappies is very easy as well. It's very simple. It's a very simple process. Not to be scared of, Joe. Changing
one-handed and blindfolded by now.
Changing your fullback though after less than 15 minutes and bringing on Jimmy Firpo for Sam Byram.
Excellent segue.
That is not a simple matter. And that could have been a problem. And yet, Junior Firpo, slightly shaky second half, I thought, defensively, once or twice. You know, a ball went in behind him a couple of times, and the second time he looked like he was really struggling. And he's not generally a man who struggles for pace or mobility. You know, he covers the ground quite well. But you could see it that his legs were like thinking, wow, we have not played this much football in a long time, second half. But going forward, there wasn't anything to quibble about, was there?
No, I enjoyed his performance. I think him getting to the byline or getting into the penalty area and cutting back with two pinpoint passes, it has to be said, for the two assists, showing composure amongst bodies in the penalty area. I think he's reminded people that, yes, actually, I did once play for Barcelona, and that, you know, if, in an attacking sense, I am actually quite competent. So hopefully we get to see more of that against Peterborough at the weekend, because you'd like to think that he starts again in that position, wouldn't you? Just to get him that rhythm.
Yeah, it's a good opportunity to get him further up to speed, because obviously Byram has got this another hamstring injury, which was desperately sad to see. You know, he must be so irritated by it, because he almost lulled us into a false sense of security by playing so many games in a row, playing so well, and you're thinking, God, this has been an absolute masterstroke, and none of our fears over his injury, potential injury problems, are going to come to pass. And then actually there's just been a little spell now of these hamstring strains, hamstring issues, that was always a possibility, but it's also a possibility with Firpo, and that's why they absolutely must get a left back this month. It would be negligence to not get a left back this month.
I mean, we were talking about Wayne Rooney earlier and how he was getting pelters from the Elland Road crowd. We can't really repeat any of those chants on the podcast, but there was one chant which you really, really like, that was about Junior Firpo, directed at the Birmingham fans. Care to give it a rendition?
No, because it's not PG-13 chant, is it?
Okay, well, maybe leave out the one word.
Okay, it's essentially, you've seen Firpo now go off home. It's that. and I just find it absolutely, just found it hilarious. Like, now, whether it's sung, whether the spirit in which it's sung, it would feel mean to try and to explore that too far, I think, and to people's motivations for singing the song. But the song in itself is just terrific. You know, like, the away fans are coming here paying their money to get a glimpse of Junior Firpo. I also like if Firpo scores, we're on the pitch. Yeah. But I also feel like Firpo might well find the back of the net before too long, because he gets really far into the penalty area and he pops up. Like, he popped up a couple of times around the penalty spot, didn't he?
Yeah. They were singing that in the FA Cup last year as well at Accrington. And then he ended up getting on the score sheet. And thankfully, there was one
the worm.
Person.
There was the worm.
He did the worm. Oh,
the guy that did the worm.
So maybe we'll hear that again at is it London Road? Or is it they now got some sort of sponsorship? Peterborough Stadium.
We'll call it. We're a traditional podcast. We'll go with a traditional name. I think we've probably said it all on Firpo. We've probably said it all before as well. You know, going forward, you probably wouldn't have too many concerns with him defensively. You know, yes, the wingers that he'll be facing in the Championship won't be as good as the wingers that caused him so many problems in the Premier League, but there are still some good wingers in the Championship, and wingers often tend to be the team's best, opposition team's best player. So
But just with Liam Miller, Preston.
Well, yeah, and just with the injury concerns as well that you would still have over him, because he has had a pretty torrid time of it with injuries and illness and whatnot since he arrived at Leeds. It just makes really good sense to beef up that area of the pitch.
Yeah, certainly does. Moving on then, with it being the new year, I was thinking we can maybe have a little bit of fun this week. We did get a reply from somebody last week where it was like, be nice if you talked about the football. So if that person is listening, we've done about half an hour of solid football. So hope you're happy. Now we're going to do New Year's resolutions. In fact, we're going to start. Graham, do you have any New Year's resolutions?
No, don't really tend to believe in New Year's resolutions.
Think the passage of time is one big, you know, from one year to the next is just another arbitrary date, don't you?
Nothing I do is going to make any difference, Joe, to how things turn out. So have that on your... it's so weird that I still haven't had an invite to Jake Humphrey's podcast to explain my theories on life.
You and stoicism.
No, I'll probably at some stage, maybe today or maybe tomorrow, I'll stop with the nonsense eating that begins around, you know, December 1st. And I'll start to think of trying to live beyond 50 again and go for a few extra runs. As for my Leeds United coverage, probably read fewer tweets in response to things. But I will still continue to magnify the responses that deserve to be magnified as I did over the last 24 hours. Just continue to enjoy my life, probably. Continue to enjoy my football. Because I really do. Like, I know that there's been frustrating performances of late, but if you can't get excited about going to see Jorginho Rutter controlling a ball behind his leg completely needlessly and ticking off his manager, then you don't deserve to be in this game, do you? Because that's the kind of stuff that just gives you a little shiver of glee. And the roulettes and the nutmegs. And Somerville and his finishes. So yeah, I'd like to see more of that. I'm going to resolve to continue to enjoy stuff like that. As for players, have you any on your mind that you think players should...
A New Year's resolution. I mean, we could go through the squad. Ilan Meslier, a New Year's resolution maybe to just keep his hands to himself.
Stop fighting.
And his elbows. Yeah. What else? Because New Year's resolutions, it's a connotation that you've done something badly over, or you've done something which is, you know, not great over the course of a year, and you want to stop that in the next year, don't you? So, I mean, a New Year's resolution for, you know, for Jamie Shackleton, maybe just let it grow. You know, let the beard grow, see if it works.
Imagine if he grew like the most magnificent beard in Championship history.
It'd be like Martin Skrtel. You know how he used to shape Buzz's head for his entire career, and then after he retired, he just came back to Anfield one day and he had like a full head of hair. And it was like, hang on, he was doing that out of choice for his entire
Scott
career.
Scott Brown was the same. You know, it didn't make him any more likable, but fair play for actually having it within you to grow a full thatch and fooling the world, or at least those who are aware of Scottish football. Jamie Shackleton, grow a beard. That would be excellent. And it would also be excellent if his beard was truly magnificent.
Chris Klassen, maybe do away with the mullet.
If you're going to go mullet, you probably have to go moustache, don't you, at the minute? Because that seems to be the way of it with young people like yourself.
Excuse me. Don't be telling the listeners that I've got a mullet when I don't.
So either do away with the mullet or grow a moustache and also dye that blonde so you look like Hulk Hogan.
Hulk Hogan Rutter, in goal for Leeds United. Okay.
If I was Rutter, my resolution would be to pick and choose my moments to control the ball with a ridiculous touch a little better. Because whilst it was funny and enjoyable, Daniel Farke is not the kind of man to test. You know, when he tells you something and you're his player, you probably don't want to have him tell you that too many times. Because when I asked him about that reaction, his reaction to Ruiter's touch was like to kind of slam his hands to his side. So he kind of made a really frustrated gesture with his hands, like, Georgie, why are you doing that? And then I asked him about it afterwards, and he said, I asked, how do you get the balance of creating good habits, but also keeping the joy in Ruiter's game? And he said, relentless explaining and talking. Relentless. He's on him every day, every time he sees him. Have you remembered, Georgie? No touches like that. Yeah,
I think Georgie, stop taking the piss.
I think maybe if you're three up, if you're three or four up, there is a fine line, though, isn't there? Because
I don't think there is a right situation in this, you know, the ultra professional environment that is modern day football. Is there a right moment?
Well, I don't know.
Because at 1-0, you're executing that, and you know, there's a risk that you might miss control and the team goes up the other end and equalizes. At 3-0, it looks like you're taking the mickey out of the other team because you're comfortable.
Yeah.
And that's you don't want that either.
But then when can you actually control the ball like that? Is there a need to? I think there still is a need to control the ball like that just because you can. But I'm not altogether sure when I would say is the perfect time to do it. Maybe at 2-0 up. Because 2-0 up, there's still some jeopardy, but you're not so, you know, so you're not comfortable, and maybe it doesn't look like you're taking the mick so much. Maybe it just looks like you're a bit of a show off all of the time. The danger is, like Farkas said, that some championship galoot, you know, some 34-year-old central midfielder or defensive midfielder goes through the back of you a couple
Sean
of minutes
Morrison.
Later
yeah. and says, someone like Sean Morrison.
Yeah, or Pearson. Pearson.
Nigel Pearson. He's going to run down the touchline.
Listen, Nigel Pearson has previously pinned a man to the ground by his neck when he was a manager, not even a player. So it's not outside the realm of possibility. And I was thinking more Ben Pearson. There is the possibility that somebody could just clatter him, you know, to get revenge for a touch like that. So I can see where Fark is coming from. So, yeah, Georgie's resolution might be to have a little think about when it's okay to do that. And when is not.
I did actually have the opportunity to speak with Georgie after the Birmingham game on New Year's Day. So that'll be out on Sunday morning. I've written a little something on that. So if you're listening to this on Sunday morning, head on over to the YEP website. There'll be a little interview with Jorginho Ruiter on there. But yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, maybe picky moments a little bit better. But he's 21, you know. He's, come on, he's young. He's making these mistakes. He's, you know, he's. I'm not willing to go too hard on him.
If I was Glenn Kamara, I would resolve to score a 35-year-old, a 35-yard screamer.
Steady on. You're the one talking about PG-13.
Yeah. That's an unfortunate one. I'm not aware of Glenn's home arrangements either, so I don't know how problematic that would be for him. So stick to a 35-yard screamer.
Oh no, he's got the giggles now. Graham's got the giggles. I'll pitch in here.
He's always there in the right place to pick up the ball when it comes out. You know, how many times do we see him pick up the ball when it comes out of the area? He's in a great position. And then he does the very kind of ultra professional, or he does the thing that his manager's asked him to do, which is recycle the ball. He'll send it out to the wing again, and Leeds will try and work it in for a better shooting opportunity. But I would really love to see him hit the back of the net from that distance, you know, just catch everybody off guard and by surprise. And instead of just making the sensible pass that he almost always makes, maybe just put one in the top corner.
Right. Okay. You might be asking a lot here, because I'm on Glenn Kamara's Wikipedia page, and I'm fairly sure there are goalkeepers with more goals in professional football than Glenn Kamara, at least in competitive leagues anyway. He has only ever scored for Rangers and Finland. That's it. He's got 11 goals in, this is going to be quick maths here, 11 goals in 347 games.
I'm not going to bite on the little bait that you, on the chum that you threw out into the water there. I would just like him, I'd just like to see him score a goal from 30 yards. Archie Gray as well. He's another.
Yeah, I'd like to see Archie score.
That's going to be a great moment, isn't it? Yeah, I'm struggling for other resolutions in the squad, though. I tell you what, Luke Ayling has got to sit down. If this interest from Borough is as genuine as is suggested, and we haven't had anything to suggest that it's not, and we also haven't had anything to suggest that it's imminent, so it's still very much in the ideas and talking about stage. But he's got a resolution to make, hasn't he? A big one. Because at this stage of his career, he probably doesn't, well, no, he definitely doesn't want to settle for a motivational role, you know, in the squad to be a leader, but not to play role, because you're writing off a good few years already, you know, if he was to accept that role now. And given that his Leeds future is more than likely going to come to an end this summer, regardless of what happens, because he's not going to start next season if they're trying to go up from the Championship again, because he's not starting right now, and he's not going to start if they go up. You know, that's just not going to happen in the Premier League. If Farke didn't play him in the Championship, he's not going to play him in the Premier League. But you would understand if it would be an absolute wrench to go to Farke and say, I'd actually like to leave Leeds United right now and go and play somewhere else, because this club is like, this is where it's all happened. Yes, mm-hmm. he had a fine career before, a career that a lot of players would kill for, because loads of players don't get to have promotions or don't even get to play in the Football League. But Leeds United is where it all took off for Luke Ayling, like where he was picked up from Bristol City, who didn't really rate him as a player that could play in a promotion chase inside in the Championship. And then he was absolutely vital for Bielsa in that team. And he was fantastic in the Premier League too, that first season. You know, he was
on the verge of an England call-up for the Euros that year, like, wasn't he?
One of the most, if not the most, progressive fullbacks when it came to carrying the ball in the top flight that season. Mm. He was huge for the way Bielsa wanted to play against teams. And it's not Luke Ayling's fault that the club relied on him perhaps past the time when they should have relied on him in the top flight. That's not on him. But when he was called upon, he always gave his absolute all. And he absolutely loves Leeds United. So it'd be a terrible decision to make, wouldn't it? You know, you're kind of choosing between staying and helping and potentially being part of another promotion squad, or doing what you actually love, which is playing football, but for someone else, and another shirt and another badge and another set of fans in another stadium.
Geographically, it obviously makes sense, because him and his family are settled in, I mean, you'd assume North Yorkshire. So it's not too much of a schlep up to Yarm or, you know, wherever. But where is it that Rockcliffe Park, I think, is where Middlesbrough train.
Yeah, so it is.
It's not too far. But yeah, I mean, Middlesbrough have been active in the window already. I think it's going to be announced later today, or it will be announced by the time whoever's listening to this. Finn Azaz, $2.5 million from Aston Villa. They've appeared to be pretty proactive in their recruitment.
That's a great pickup. That for two
great
and a half million
for that,
as well.
For that money, yeah.
He is a very effective Championship player, and looked, you know, looked good on the occasions we've seen him this season. Yeah, good business from them, and good early business as well. Yeah, Ayling would be a very good signing for another Championship team, you know, if they need a right back. I just don't think he's getting into Farke's team unless there's a raft of injuries. I mean, the fact that nothing says it more, really, than Archie Gray, a centre midfielder who's 17, playing there. You know, that that kind of was the exclamation mark on the statement, you know, that Farke was making. And Farke has been really complimentary to him. This is my concern about if Ayling was to leave. Do they have the right voices and the right leadership in the changing room if you were to lose an Ayling? Yeah, you've still got Cooper and Dallas is still around the squad. But in terms of players who are in the match day squad, in the dressing room, kind of in the trenches when things are going wrong and have been through it in the championship, have been through heartache in the championship with a promotion race, and they've been through success and they've played in the Premier League and they've played a lot of games in the EFL. There's not many.
My counterpoint to that would be, is that enough to keep someone around?
From a selfish, if you're going to be selfish as a club, then yes. Because clubs take selfish decisions all the time. You know, clubs almost always do what's right for the club first. And then, you know, what's right for the player is kind of like a secondary concern. I think it's definitely a consideration that should be had or discussed by Leeds before giving the green light to anything when it comes to their veteran players. I get that whole argument of, well, you don't want an unhappy player on your hands, because if Ayling decides, actually, yeah, I do want this move, this is a great opportunity for me, I'd like to go and play, and you say no, then it's potentially not a great situation. But
I don't think you'd get that with Ayling, though.
No,
I think
no.
He's very, very professional, isn't he? So I think...
And he's very Leeds as well. Like, you know, you can see that in the fact that there hasn't been any huffing or sulking.
No.
There's been no poor body language. He's been, when he's been in the matchday squad and he's been warming up, he's been out there encouraging players and passing on feedback and doing the leadership thing. You know, him and Cooper both. And from what Farke says, Bamford as well has been doing that with Ruter and with Matteo Joseph, giving them wisdom. But it is a young squad, isn't it? That's just my only concern. And it's not like a concern that would make me think, oh yeah, you cannot let that move happen. It's just a concern that, do they have enough in the way of leadership?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very valid point. I'm sure we'll get more on that as the month progresses. But yeah, as you say, Archie Gray, Jed Spence, Sam Byram, all options, which on the face of things do. Jamie Shackleton. I mean, I was going to include Shaq, but then I thought, no, I'm going to go with the three players who definitely seem to be ahead of Ayling in the pecking order at right back at the moment. But yeah, the squad is pretty set in that position. So you could see it from a sort of a purely squad building exercise. In terms of transfers and loans and all that sort of thing, Sonny Perkins is back at Leeds and will be staying at Thorpe Arch for the next 6 months at the very least, because he's been recalled from his loan spell at Oxford. Didn't really go too well for him there, has to be said. Wasn't playing very regularly. I think only made 6 appearances, 3 of which were in the EFL Trophy, which, you know, it's not exactly the most tasking competition. I think he was playing against the likes of Chelsea's under 21s, that sort of thing. Went there under ex West Ham coach Liam Manning leads Oxford, who were, I think, 19th last season, to second in the table. Perkins isn't really getting a look in, as you know, which is understandable considering that he's a new face and the team that started the season were playing really well. Manning then gets plucked by Bristol City. Des Buckingham comes in as the new manager. He doesn't fancy Perkins either. And ultimately, it's just been a sort of a wait and see what happens in January. And I know that some people were thinking, okay, we'll send him straight back out on loan. But they can't do that because he played for Oxford. He's also played for Leeds this season. Came off the bench in the opener against Cardiff City. So you can't play for 3 teams in the same season, which means that he'll stay with the 21s now for the rest of the campaign. I mean, loans are difficult to get right. You know, it's difficult to place, particularly a young player who is taking their first steps into senior football. It's difficult to place them at the right club. And yeah, it's a learning curve for Leeds. It's a learning curve for Perkins. And we'll just have to see what comes of it. But from a selfish perspective, I'm looking forward to watching him more for the 21s in the second half of the season, because again, I still think he's one of the better players in that squad.
Yeah, I think his resolution has to be to leave absolutely zero room for anyone to suggest that he's not been at it in training. You know, he's got to dispel any notion that attitude is what's holding him back, or that application is what's holding him back. When we were talking about Perkins right back at the start of the season, back when you know, the Nyonto thing was kicking off, and it was after Birmingham, wasn't it, that we asked Farke about Perkins not being in the squad. And although there was kind of some attempt from the club to suggest that he wasn't really directly talking about Perkins, it felt very much to me like Farke was saying, you won't be in my squad unless you train at 100% every time and you show me that you're actually really up for the fight. So that leaves a question mark. And then when he was asked about it again a few days later, and he basically reiterated and hammered home the point, didn't he? And said, you've got to train 100% or you won't get into my squad. So the fact that Perkins has gone out and not forced his way into the Oxford setup, you know, even if they've got in-form strikers and in-form players, if you're 100% on it and you've got the talent that everyone thinks you have, you've got to feature and you've got to figure more than that. Even just as a sub for the last 15 minutes of games, for the last 20 minutes of games, you've got to feature and you've got to make it happen for yourself.
That's the challenge, isn't it? You have to force your way in to then become a professional footballer. You know, that plays regularly.
And good players do. You know, yes, there are good players who had difficult loan spells. Like Patrick Bamford had some loans that didn't particularly work out before it happened for him. But sooner or later, Perkins has got to make it happen for himself. And this is an absolutely key time for that between now and the summer. So what he's got to do is have Farke absolutely purring about his attitude, because he will get asked about Perkins at some point in the next while. Probably be a bit pointless right now, just because all we'll get is Farke's plans for him, which will be, you know, he's in the 21s. But once he's been back in a bit, then it'll be interesting to hear how he's doing and see how he's doing, because, you know, Leeds were willing to go to a tribunal to get this kid, and West Ham wanted to keep this kid. Both clubs obviously rated him very highly, and he looked like a very good player for the 21s last season. I mean, he scored a senior goal as well. I mean, ultimately it was a four yarder, whatever. But he's got a challenge now to do absolutely everything to end the season on a positive and try and force himself back towards senior football.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd share that. That's pretty spot on. What should we finish on? Peterborough. Do you know much about them this season, Graham? Considering that we're going to be going up to London Road on Sunday in the FA Cup third round.
I know that they have the highest open play expected goals in their division. So I'm expecting a creative side. They always have good attackers because they recruit superbly, and they always seem to have somebody who's on the verge of a move to a top championship team or even a Premier League team. They just seem to make a lot of money from selling players and sell on clauses and all of that. And I suppose having the kind of the archetypal wheeler dealer and Barry Fry involved in your setup will probably help that. But it just feels like a club that often makes good decisions. Whether you like him or not, you know, the chairman, or El Presidente, as he's got on his Twitter bio, you know, he might come across as a bit of a mouthpiece at times with a lot to say for himself. But I feel like he can kind of back it up by his record there. They just always seem to be well run from the outside anyway. You know, the Peterborough fans among you, who in our regular listeners can feel free to contact us and disagree. But I get the dread about this fixture a little bit from a Leeds United perspective, because FA Cup almost inevitably equals changes, because players need minutes. But we've seen what that can do. And Crawley away is still very much imprinted on my mind as a you know, a terrible, terrible day for Leeds United. And there were other occasions when managers said how much they valued the FA Cup. Then they changed the team so much that there was just no rhythm. There was no momentum because the team was just too different. And the performance was really underwhelming. So it's kind of a catch-22 because you can't keep flogging players. Like Ethan Ampadu, for me, can't play. He can't start in this game. You know, I feel like that would be lunacy to continue playing him all the time. But you take him out of the team and do you have enough to really get a grip of Peterborough, keep them under control and dominate the game?
Potentially, yeah. You'd have to say that even with Leeds' second string, Leeds' second string is still probably better than a League One outfit, even though this is a good League One outfit. I mean, you were talking about Leeds having a young squad earlier. This is one of the youngest squads in the EFL. Lots and lots of players under the age of 24. And you're going to have to be on your best behaviour. Enough giggling from you, because they've got a player in defensive midfield called Giando Fuchs. So, you know, behave yourself.
So immature, Joe. So immature.
I'm sorry. I know exactly what you're going to be like in the press room with your finger pressed up against his name on the back of the programme. You're like.
I'm already thinking of headlines. I mean, I can't even say them.
They've also got Alan's son, Harry Titchmarsh. He's 18. And who else? Johnson Clark Harris. I feel like I've seen his name pop up on the Sky Sports video printer for an eternity now. The amount of goals he's scored in the EFL.
A lot of them
at Peterborough.
If I'm not mistaken, Chesterfield thought that they got him on a transfer deadline day. And whoever, I couldn't put a name to it, but somebody was obviously letting them believe that he was on his way to Chesterfield until he rocked up at Coventry, I think it was. And it was at that point that they realised, he's not coming here. He's driven past, kept driving, arrived at Coventry, had a medical signed. So that probably means we're not going to get him.
So you got some beef with him then, do you?
No, because it meant that Chesterfield then did a Swansea routine with Christian Dennis, who was at Bradford and had been planning to sign for Bradford. And it led to an absolutely phenomenal interview from Bradford's head of recruitment. Name escapes me, but he was lamenting the fact that Bradford had paid for the pizza that Christian Dennis and his girlfriend were eating as they awaited Chesterfield giving the final sign off on the deal. We've even bought the lad pizza. Can you believe it? And they've not let us sign him.
As if that's like any sort of God-given right that you have to sign a player.
I always felt like Chesterfield should have reimbursed them or sent them some vouchers at least, you know, for a pizzeria. There was some great potential content to be had from that. Along the lines of Leeds with the fish and chips when Rafinha signed and Ren fans were absolutely fuming. That's what I know about him. But yeah, I just expect them to be good. I expect them to be very, very competent. I expect them to cause problems. And so that's why too many changes, I think, would be risky. Mm. I also think you have to play Bamford because there's an opportunity here.
Rhythm,
yeah, like absolutely. Like Bamford, we've talked about for a long time being a streaky striker who can score, you know, four or five goals in six or seven games. Bamford gets another one or another two, you know, not to be disrespectful or presumptuous, but if he was to get on the score sheet once or twice against Peterborough, all of a sudden he's on a bit of a roll, you know, and he's feeling good and the feeling's coming back of what it was like to be prolific. And then you've got an option, haven't you? You've turned a player who was coming on in games and not really doing a great deal for himself or for you, and admittedly in difficult circumstances with players who weren't creating the best chances for him, but you've got a player banging on the door then and saying, well, hang on a minute. Are you really going to put Pirro back in at 10? Or are you going to keep me at 9 with Georgie behind me? It would be, I think it would be a smart move to play him in the hope that he scores again. Who else? Who else do you play? Who needs a rest?
Well, yeah, I mean, you'd probably say Somerville needs a rest just to reduce the risk factor of injury because he's going to be so important. But then, you know, do you end up having to bring him on if the scores are still level at 60, 65 minutes? I think you play Nyonto. I think you play Jaden Anthony. I think, yeah, you're right. You start Bamford. Do you put Archie back into midfield? Play Spence at right back?
Yes.
And give Kamara a rest or give Ampadu a rest?
Probably give Ampadu a rest and play Kamara with Gray. It depends on the Creswell situation, doesn't it? It depends how advanced they've got with a sense of what they want to do with Creswell. They've got two loan spots left, Leeds, and for me the priorities are a left back and a 10. Those are still the priorities for me. Maybe the goalkeeping situation might change things slightly. But if you're going to let Creswell go, do you have enough at centre-back for an emergency, for like a real emergency, given that Cooper picks up niggles now and again? You know, Pascal actually has had a bit of a difficult time recently. Rodon's played an awful lot of football since he got in. Would you need another centre-back?
I think you would, yeah, because otherwise you've got three first-team centre-halves.
Yeah. If Creswell went, yes, Ampadu can drop in there, and yes, Ayling could play there, but he might be off. So there's so much in flux, isn't there?
You don't want to be dropping Ampadu into a secondary position because then you lose everything that he brings in the field.
Yeah. Playing Creswell, I think that might, what you're going to do with him might dictate, you know. But you could see a case for him playing and Farke saying that he deserves it because he's been so spot on with his attitude and all of that. So you could maybe see him coming in and playing alongside Rodon, probably, because Cooper's probably the one that needs protecting the most.
Yeah, but also that's two right-sided centre-halves.
It is, but they're professional footballers.
Well, who are you playing at left-back? Well, Junior. You're going to play Junior Firpo left-back, aren't you? So that's fine because you've got a left-footer there. I was thinking if you had Sam Byram at left-back, but obviously he's injured, or Spence, then you've got right footers all the way across the back four then.
Yeah. But they do have left feet. They are physically, they have been born with left feet. So,
yep.
You know, there's the possibility there for them to use them.
Okay. Right. Before we get into more ramblings about Peterborough, we're going to cut this one at a nice hour, a couple of minutes, because Graham does like the sound of his own voice. Thank you for tuning in to the latest episode of the Inside Elland Road podcast. We'll have all the build up to Sunday's FA Cup game on the YEP website. Plenty of stuff on there. Any final parting comments, Graham?
No, none. Just enjoy the FA Cup. Let's hope they get through and get a really good draw or a really interesting draw. But just don't look beyond Peterborough. I don't expect it to be easy at all.
Yeah, likewise. Well, thank you for listening. I've been Joe Donahue, and this has been the Inside Elland Road podcast. Bye for now.
The Inside Elland Road podcast is sponsored by PR Supplies at Unit 2 Wither Park Industrial Estate in Leeds. PR Supplies, everything for the home.